This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, we'll take a look at the newly refreshed Cincinnati wing at the Cincinnati Art Museum. But first, children with uncorrected vision conditions or eye health problems face many barriers in life. And vision doesn't just happen. A child's brain learns how to use eyes to see, just like he or she learns how to use legs to walk. And the longer a vision problem goes undiagnosed and untreated, the more a child's brain learns to accommodate for the problem. Here to discuss childhood vision are Dr. Carla Zadnick, Dean of the College of Optometry at The Ohio State University, and optometrist Dr. Josiah Young with OptiCare Vision Centers. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Carla and Josiah, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Carla, what kinds of obstacles are kids going to face if they have an uncorrected vision condition or an undetected eye health issue?
So I think sometimes parents don't have a sense of that. Children aren't very good historians. They certainly, very young children, can't tell us, gee, my vision's blurrier than the baby or toddler next to me. And so they will have problems with really think of all the things that you use your eyes for. We estimate that about 80% under normal conditions of what we learn every day comes through our eyes and visual system. And so imagine struggling to learn that 80%, not being able to see well at distance, having, as one starts to read, having the print always look double, or you get a headache every time you try to read. Amblyopia or lazy eye, which I know we'll talk about more, which occurs in only one eye. You're relying on only one eye. You don't even really have a spare, and your depth perception is compromised. So although children might on the surface seem to be functioning well, vision problems, undetected vision problems, could really affect them in almost every aspect of their lives.
And I think you'd be surprised when I do examinations, I talk to the parents, and you know, you find there's a little bit of a vision difficulty, and you say, well, how's your son or daughter doing in school? Or are they reading well or having any problems? And many times, those are the kids that are struggling in school as well.
And yeah, parents just don't think about eyes.
Well, it's interesting, Carla, what you were saying earlier, because you were describing me. I didn't find out that I had a vision problem until I was in third grade. I just thought that everything was supposed to look blurry. And fortunately for me, a very observant teacher picked up on the fact that I squinted at the chalkboard a lot. And so she started asking me, can you see what I'm writing up here? And I said, uh-huh. No, I can't. So off to the school nurse I went. But it was amazing. Once I got my eyes corrected, it opened up a world for me that it helped me academically, too.
And I think that's the usual way that parents think that their kids' vision difficulties will be discovered. Oh, if they're not seeing well, they'll figure it out in school. And I'd like to make the case that it's more important to get kids' eyes checked at an earlier age so we can discover those problems, well before they happen, especially for lazy eye, amblyopia, things like that.
Because those things are treatable at those early ages. I mean, that's really the key, is when you think about very young children, the problems experienced are pretty rare. They're unusual. They're in single-digit percentages. But when we find them, something can be done about them, and more can be done about them at those early ages than if they're detected later. So, Josiah, that's a really important point.
Carla, you talk about amblyopia. What are some of the other childhood problems you can have with your eyes?
So the other two, and Josiah, chip in as soon as I forget one, but the other two that occurred that I think of are a strabismus, that is an actual eye turn. And again, parents or pediatricians even or babysitters might think that, if the kid's eye were turning in or out, I'd be able to see that. But we know that there can be functional eye turns that are not cosmetically obvious to even the most observant parent or child caregiver. And the other one is extreme farsightedness. So the baby in that case might exhibit no symptoms. And that can only be diagnosed through an eye examination. Those are kind of the top three that I think of.
Right. And if you can go on a limb here. And one of the other things is the health portion of this eye exam. And you can discover conditions like a tumor in the eye. Retinoblastoma is one of those. And you can discover that at an earlier age. You can save the kid's life.
This brings up an interesting point. Is there a difference between an eye exam and an and an eye screening? What would the difference be?
There are many differences among those, you know, the dilation portion of the exam, where, you know, you actually look inside of the child's eye. And in many cases, you can also, not only you discover health problems inside the eye, you also get a better prescription. Dilating the child's eyes helps you relax the focusing muscles and obtain better results, so you can be more accurate with your assessment of the child's vision.
Carla, how soon, for instance, with a condition like colorblindness, how soon can you know a child is colorblind? Do you look for that at an early age?
So that's really as soon as the child could actually respond. That's really something that we don't have an objective way to assess. So that would be something that typically we might do more when a child would be able to physically respond and to any of either the color matching tests or the color tests that you've probably done before, where you see a figure in kind of a ground of a bunch of dots. And that one, because there isn't really anything to do about it, is one that I wouldn't be as worried about detecting early. Once we do detect it, I think parents knowing about it and knowing, you know, perhaps that there are a few limited careers that child should not set his or her heart on, it's usually his, might be in order. But color vision deficits are not one that I would say warrant that same early vigilance that, say, amblyopia, strabismus, or uncorrected refractive error do.
And can you correct color blindness?
It's, you know, no.
Okay.
Simple answer. We can hedge that a little bit with some new devices that are out, but I think the answer is no as
right.
well.
Right.
You know, Josiah, you were talking about catching this early. The earlier, the better. Are there differences among the states as to when they require mandatory vision screening for kids before going into school?
All right. I'm very fortunate to practice in Newport, Kentucky. And interestingly enough, even though we're in the Cincinnati area, the state of Kentucky requires an eye exam for kids entering preschool, into public preschool. And I can't speak to the benefit of that enough, because many times you're going to see kids who would otherwise not have gotten their eyes checked, and you can discover those vision problems earlier, intervene earlier, and those kids are on track, at least with their eyes, to learn appropriately in school. Ohio, unfortunately, hasn't come around on that yet. But I think, you know, other states are talking about what Kentucky has done, and my hope is that will go nationwide at some point in time.
Why do you think other states haven't come around on that yet, screening early?
You know, I think you can get into a political argument, but I think really, if you look at the statistics and you look at how many kids you can, you know, save their vision and improve their lives, I don't think there's a whole lot of good arguments against doing the eye exam early. What do you think, Carla?
Yeah, so the arguments are typically just expense. So you asked specifically about vision screening. So in Ohio, there are periodic requirements for vision screening by a school nurse. Where Kentucky is different is the requirement of a full eye examination before school entry. And that's a key difference. And I think when states haven't been able to make the same leap that Kentucky has, it's mostly related to expense, although the Affordable Care Act has changed mm-hmm. that landscape mm-hmm. in that children's vision care is an essential benefit for children covered under the Affordable Care Act. In Ohio, the one step we have taken is that any child who is being newly referred for an IEP, an Individualized Education Plan, special education, is required to have an eye exam. You can imagine a child who's struggling in school, wouldn't it make sense to get their eyes functioning optimally before they start that special education, that individualized education plan? So Ohio's taken that step. We just haven't been able to quite make the leap of faith that Kentucky has.
And I think it's important to mention the education aspect of this. Probably the burden is, or the barrier here is educating the public about what an eye exam really is. And,
right.
And to some extent, the state legislature, what really constitutes an eye exam? It's not just reading the chart
right.
in the school nurse's office.
Eye exam is, if I understand, more medical. You're describing dilation and actually looking at the eye's health and that kind of thing.
Right.
So it's a lot more extensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Carla, what age do you think that kids should start having their eyes checked?
So you could argue, and there's a national program, that really children should have their eyes checked before they turn one. between the ages of 6 and 12 months. Before 6 months, hard to do much of an examination. And you may be thinking, oh, my heavens, what could you possibly do on
a baby?
But there we can't do color vision, but there are plenty of objective ways that we can assess whether a child's eye is in the appropriate focus, that is, whether or not they would need glasses, whether or not the child's eyes are aligned, whether the vision in the two eyes is equal. It's not a very long exam, as you can probably imagine, but it is one where between 6 and 12 months is really our first recommendation to get a child on the right track for a lifetime of good eye health.
Josiah, how do you give an eye exam to a kid that's under a certain age? I mean, that's just
very careful.
Very careful.
it's really a fun process for me. I love working with infants because they don't disagree with you. They don't hide their eyes like, you know, some toddlers can and things like that. All you got to do is shine the lights and, you know, get the baby's attention and have a playful and fun time. And at the same time, you're examining their eyes, you're checking for vision deficiencies, you're checking for anatomical problems. So by the end of it, you know, they've had an eye exam and the parents and the kid have had some fun.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And Josiah, you had a wonderful experience recently with speaking of very, very young, a 10-month-old child.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Oh, what a beautiful child she was. So Piper, as everyone knows, was the baby who went viral, I guess, on the internet with her glasses. Yeah, in a good way. So, you know, she the parents had noticed that Piper was having trouble meeting, you know, some milestones like crawling and things like that. And so they went to their pediatrician. The pediatrician recommended Piper to have an eye exam. And so they found me. And during the eye exam, you know, I did my infant exam and discovered very quickly that she was farsighted, and enough so it was not in the normal range and that she was going to require some glasses. So I had the conversation with the parents and they said, okay, let's do this. And we got her some glasses that, you know, have the strap on the back because you got to, you know, specific glasses for infants. Otherwise, they go on the floor or in their mouth or whatever, you know. So, they get the glasses. We tried them on in the office. And there's, you know, if you read the stuff online and people are wondering if this was a publicity stunt or nothing, none of it was planned. So they get the glasses in the office. The baby's taking it off her face. And then we said, okay, well, wait till the baby's a little more calm and then try again. So they go down the street to Flip Daddy's in Newport, and they try on the glasses there. They film it, and her reaction is just priceless. you just can't, you know. It's just, it brings a tear to your eye.
Yeah, it really is wonderful.
Some 40 million views.
Is that how many, Carl?
You can hear Dad in the background. You know, Dad in the background is laughing, but you also have a feeling that he was getting pretty emotional. Just fantastic.
I love the look on Piper's face, too, because, like you're saying, first she's resistant. She's like, I don't want anything to do with this. Take these things off. Then once they're on and she starts to look around, her eyes get very wide, and all of a sudden, wow, that's what stuff looks like.
Yeah, that's my mom's face, clearly. You know?
Yep.
Can you imagine that? It's just, I mean, for your experience when you were in grade school, you know, seeing the things clearly, and that, you know, the first thing you see when you put on your glasses is your mother's face, clearly. It's just, it just gets you.
Cool.
Well, and again, like I was saying, it helped me academically because suddenly I could see what the teacher was putting up on the mm-hmm. blackboard. I could read a lot better than I had in the past. So getting my vision corrected was a big step. We'll continue our conversation about children's vision, and you're welcome to join us by making that phone call to 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guests this afternoon are Dr. Carla Zadnick, Dean of the College of Optometry at The Ohio State University, and optometrist Dr. Josiah Young with OptiCare Vision Centers. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Josiah and Carla, you're both optometrists, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Carla, can you explain to us what's the difference? I mean, they're optometrists, they're ophthalmologists, they're opticians. What are all the various different levels? What's the difference between
them? So the three O's, as we call them. So let me start with optometry. So an optometrist is someone who has gone to undergraduate education, and then they go on to get their doctor of optometry at one of the 21 schools or colleges of optometry in the United States. Ours is the only one in Ohio. And then they can be licensed to practice right then. They can also go on to do an optional residency. About one in five does that. And optometrists are really, think of them as the primary eye care practitioner. So they can diagnose all the kinds of things we've been talking about, treat all of them, treat many conditions with eye drops and oral medications up to and including glaucoma. And when they say, hey, this person needs surgery, this child or this person needs a cataract surgery, that's when they would refer to an ophthalmologist. So an ophthalmologist then has gone to undergrad and medical school and done an internship and a residency specific to the eye. So they're medical doctors who then go on to specialize in the eye and vision. And I think of them as really more the tertiary, you know, provider who swoops in when the patient needs something that's outside the scope of the optometrist. And opticians then are the people that you think about that actually can fill prescriptions from either optometrists or ophthalmologists for spectacles and sometimes contact lenses.
Josiah, what are the different subspecialties? Aren't there subspecialties among the ophthalmologists?
In ophthalmology, you can be a pediatric ophthalmologist. You can be, you know, different types of surgeries, you know, retina specialist. You can specialize in almost every part of the eyeball and become a specialist there for ophthalmology.
So just like a regular medical doctor, there are all the different specialties that you can be involved in.
Right, and I like to think of optometry kind of like if you go to your primary care physician and then they might refer you to a specialist for whatever particular condition. You might go to your optometrist for your primary eye care exam, and your optometrist might refer you to an ophthalmologist for cataract surgery or for a specific type of condition.
Josiah, how common is it for infants under the age of two, say, how common is it nationwide for them to need glasses?
Well, if we look at statistics from the infancy program, we're finding that about 1 in 10 infants that were examined need some type of, they have some type of diagnosis that needs treatment, whether that be glasses or some sort of, they find a vision condition or a medical condition in the eye. And that actually goes up a little higher when the kids reach school age, and it can be as high as 1 in 4 children have an undiagnosed vision condition in grade school.
So it's more common than we might think then.
Absolutely. All the more reason to get in and get your eyes checked early.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Paul in Mount Auburn. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. Go ahead, you're on.
I have a question. Sorry. I have a question. The question is access to care. Does the doctor here accept almost every other insurance like Medicaid, Molina, DentaQuest? There are a lot of these managed health cares, and also now we have Obamacare expansion. Or does he limit himself to certain insurances?
Okay, Paul, thanks for the question. We appreciate it.
I think I could respond to that. Each individual practitioner would possibly be on different insurance plans, and you'd have to call the provider's office and ask specifically, or you can call your insurance plan that you're on and ask if the doctor you wish to see is a member of the panel. That's a decision that each doctor's office makes for various reasons, and it's not limited for any particular one reason or blanketed across the board. You just have to call the specific office that you'd like to go to and find out if they're on the plan that you have.
Might be available on their website as well,
mm-hmm.
Either on their website or the website of your insurance provider too.
Yeah, on our website, we try to list all of the major insurance plans that we accept, but then we also make the statement, hey, you know, call us because there may be some that, you know, we are on the plan, but just, you know, aren't on the website. So always call.
The other thing I might say in Ohio, that the Ohio Optometric Association has a program that has really pledged that no child will go without an eye examination and eye care. So in at, as a court of last resort or out of just sheer frustration, I often will tell a parent to call the Ohio Optometric Association, which is in Worthington, Ohio, as a toll-free number, and they could also assist, because I know sometimes for some people, all the insurances and the coverages and everything can be very confusing. So that's a source of information that could help sort everything out.
And Josiah, you're part of a program called Infancy, which is spelled infant with S-E-E on the end of it.
Right.
Tell us about that, because that's a program that can help parents cover the costs.
And that removes the burden of cost for the care of an infant. So Infancy is a nationwide program of optometrists who provide care for a no-cost eye exam for infants in the first year of life, usually between 6 months and 12 months. You can find a provider on infantc.org, and if the provider's listed there, then you, whether you have insurance or you do not have insurance, that exam can be performed at no cost. And it's a great program. It was, in fact, it's about 10 years in the making. And so at its 10-year anniversary, it started off with Jimmy Carter kind of kicking it off 10 years ago, and now we have the viral video of Baby Piper, you know, with 40 million
40
views.
Million.
And it's, yeah, so Infancy is a wonderful program.
Does Ohio have any kind of a similar program, Carla?
Yeah, that's a national program, actually. Infancy is administered by the American Optometric Association and has the same, so the same access can happen in Ohio. Interestingly, Jimmy Carter was an advocate of it, as Josiah mentioned years ago, because he has two grandchildren who had early undetected amblyopia or lazy eye. And so he felt like they hadn't really done right by their kids out of ignorance, and he was very supportive of the Infancy program in its infancy, so to speak.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk with Maria in Liberty Township. Hi, Maria.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Go right ahead. You're on.
Well, we just had our son in for an eye exam. He's going into first grade. And he has kind of a low prescription, plus one and plus 1.25. And the optometrist kind of went back and forth saying, well, we could go ahead and get him glasses or we could not. He might grow out of it. And I was just wondering what your opinion was on this matter.
In other words, might he grow out of the problem? Is that the question?
Sure. I always recommend.
Right.
Thanks, Maria.
I always recommend follow-up on that. So, you know, without knowing all the details of the examination, I can't comment as to why, you know, why they might, you know, maybe there's a specific reason other than just farsightedness. And were the eyes working well as a team? Was a child meeting certain, you know, milestones in school? Those are those things that, you know, the practitioner needs to decide and have the conversation with you about. But I always recommend a good follow-up schedule to say, okay, you know what? He's on the borderline or whatever. And we can go both ways here. Let's go ahead and try it. And then let's follow up in a few months and see what's going on. And then if we elect to say, okay, looks like he's getting better, whatever. So you can adjust that treatment plan as time goes on.
Let's speak with Mark in Glendale. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I just had a question, and it's not, you know, I'm not an infant, of course, but I'll be 60 this year, and I had a detached retina. And I had it operated on, and it was my
understanding. When did you have that, Mark? Was that when you were younger?
No, probably just a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And evidently, you know, your eye has like jelly in it. It turns to fluid, and sometimes it pulls the retina off. Here's my question. I went from 20/20 in that eye to like 20/600, you know, afterwards. And supposedly it can be corrected to 20/50. I don't think that that's accurate. It's great for one thing. I can see something in that bad eye 6 inches away, fantastic. Everything else I'm farsighted with. I'm just wondering, what happens? You know, is that just a matter of rods and cones not being lined up correctly after the operation? And I'm assuming that no one is going to detach that retina and try to, you know, make it right. So I just, you know, wondered if they could explain what's going on there.
Okay, Mark.
Anytime you have the retina detach for whatever reason, if those photoreceptors are removed from their connections for a period of time, some of that vision may not be regained. The surgeons do a fantastic job. There's some great surgeons in this area who repair these retinal detachments, and many people recover some vision, as it looks like you've had recovered some vision. you know, the prognosis for how much vision you can recover depends on each individual incident. And, you know, for any retinal detachment, time is of the essence in getting that treatment to seeing how much vision you can actually recover.
Let's speak with Sherry in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, thanks. How about yourself?
Good. Thank you so much for doing this program. I'm so glad that parents are hearing this. I guess as a parent, I always thought that I would know if my kid couldn't see very well. We had a son that from the age of like two, he was always getting really close to the computer or to the TV. He would get really close to a book. But it wasn't until he was almost halfway through kindergarten and he was already behind that we had an eye exam done and realized he was very, very farsighted.
Yeah.
So again, I just, as a parent, you know, he wasn't running into stuff. I just thought I would know if he was having vision trouble, but those kind of signs, I didn't know what to look for. So are there any signs that parents should look for?
That is a great question to ask at this point, Sherry.
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
Go right ahead, Carla and Josiah. Tell us about things that parents should be looking for.
So I would say your experience is not unusual. You know, so especially often if it's a first child, it's sort of like you don't have anything to compare it to. But I think, first of all, what I would say is I hate to put that burden on parents. So that's why I think one of the things we're trying to educate people about is the value of routine comprehensive eye care, because there's so many things that could be there that you don't know that they're there. But you've demonstrated one, a child, you know, sort of positioning anything they're looking at oddly, or even, you know, if you look at an, I think you see an eye turn and you say, oh no, it can't be an eye turn, I'm not going to worry about that. You know, if you saw it, I would say it's something worth investigating. If a child would hold his head in a not primary position to look at something in particular, sort of look over to the left or tilt his head,
yeah,
those might be signs as well. Josiah, what am I forgetting?
I always try to educate parents and say, it, you know, the kid is rubbing their eyes a lot. If there's frequent headaches, squinting, of course, if you notice the eyes turning in and out. And then when they're in school, difficulty reading, difficulty paying attention. And I think that difficulty paying attention thing is a very big sign, because many kids who I've had seen in my office who have been, you know, diagnosed with an attention disorder, we find out that they, you know, when every time they look at something up close, they see two of them. And so, you know, if you check the individual vision on the chart, they were 20/20 in each eye. And then we give them something to look at up close and they say, well, which one do you want me to look at? What do you mean, which one? Well, there's two things there. Really? Oh, okay. So your child is seeing double vision in school. No wonder they don't want to pay attention when the teacher gives them work. So those are those things that, you know, some of those signs you can see on your own as a parent, and some of those signs, you know, we pick up on in the exam room.
Carla, are there things that that parents can do that to help their kids with their visual development?
Oh, that's a good question. So we have some research going on here that indicates in children who are really farsighted that we're even thinking that focusing exercise may help. In general, I would say that there aren't I'll tell you the one we found from our research. So one of the things we found in 20 years of investigating why children become nearsighted in about 5,000 children. So, Mark, that's probably what happened to you in the third grade.
Yes.
And we're trying to figure out why. Much to our surprise, what we have found as a factor that protects against the development of nearsightedness before it starts is more time out of doors.
Interesting,
crazy,
right?
Crazy,
yeah.
Stuff, you know. So you
very
think,
interesting.
The kids already can't see very well and they're klutzy, so they don't like to play baseball and they don't go outside. It's not that. It's before any of that develops. So we don't know whether it's related to just simply light exposure, to vitamin D, to something in the dopamine pathways. But lately I have been telling parents that, you know, sort of returning to the days of my youth when kids went out to play in the summer and didn't come back until the mosquitoes came out is not possibly the worst piece of advice. Unfortunately, our studies have not reached the same conclusion about anything related to video games or TV. I hate to say it because parents are saying like, oh, no, we want those to be bad. But in fact, we haven't found an association
right.
with those.
I have that conversation all the time. Yeah.
So nothing on smart tablets or video screens or computer screens at Josiah,
I can't
Carla?
Indict any of those, unfortunately.
No, of course, in moderation. You know, anytime you spend 8 hours
moderation.
Playing video games, that's a bad deal. So,
all
you
things
know.
In moderation, including moderation. There you go.
Right.
Carla and Josiah, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
This has been great fun. Thanks for the opportunity.
Dr. Carla Zadnick, Dean of the College of Optometry at The Ohio State University, and optometrist Dr. Josiah Young with OptiCare Vision Centers. Coming up, we'll explore the Cincinnati Art Museum's early Cincinnati galleries. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.